I'm Ebong Udama, and I cover Connecticut political news for WSHU Public Radio. Staying well-informed is essential to a well-functioning democracy. Understanding facts and filtering out noise takes work, and our mission at WSHU is to help you do that through coverage from our newsroom, NPR News, and the BBC. We're expanding our world together. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Connecticut finished last fiscal year with a budget surplus. Candidates for New York's 2nd Congressional District debated last night. Two Connecticut prisoners have ended their hunger strike. And it's National Coming Out Day. Those stories and more are ahead. I'm Molly Ingram, in for Sabrina Garone. Connecticut's general fund had $400 million in surplus at the end of fiscal year 2024, according to State Comptroller Sean Scanlon. Lawmakers have disagreed about whether the state should remove its fiscal guardrails to spend more on things like health care and education. Democratic Governor Ned Lamont and Republican lawmakers are in favor of keeping the spending caps. Scanlon agrees.
We are not out of the woods yet. Obviously, that rainy day fund is imperative for us to keep strong so that if and when a recession does hit the state, whether that's in a few months or a few years, we are prepared and will not have to make some of the very, very devastating cuts and tax increases that we had to do the last time a recession hit the state.
Some Democrats say the state should amend the guardrails. This is the sixth year that Connecticut has had a budget surplus. Two Connecticut prison inmates have ended a hunger strike they say was meant to improve conditions in the system. WSHU's Shelley Hassman-Kadish reports.
The two men are serving life sentences at McDougal Walker Correctional Institution. They had their first meal this week after refusing to eat for 23 days. Hearst Connecticut Media reports the two ended the strike when State Corrections Ombudsman Devon Ward intervened on their behalf. The inmates began the protest to demand more staff, better health care, better food, and fewer lockdowns. Ward says staff at the facility may not have control over the number of health care professionals hired, but the strike has made them aware of concerns that can be brought up to the state legislature. Shelley Hassman-Kadish, WSHU News.
The candidates running for New York's 2nd Congressional District on Long Island took questions this week on the future of Social Security. Thousands of Long Islanders rely on the benefits they receive from the retirement fund. Political newcomer Rob Lubin is the Democratic candidate.
The winning hand in this argument the Democrats have had for a long time. We want to protect people. We want to make sure people have access to their Social Security and that it's not being under threat by one party. So bipartisanship is essential.
Lubin says he plans to set up an advisory board to help him improve access to Social Security if he's elected. He's challenging Republican incumbent Andrew Garbarino, who's held the seat since 2021.
Local support comes from Hartford Healthcare, the only health system in the Northeast, with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group, HartfordHealthcare.org.
Long Island's coastal communities are the most likely in the country to suffer from repeated flooding damage. That's according to the Federal Emergency Management Agency. FEMA says more than 10,000 buildings in Long Island have received at least two significant insurance payments in the last 10 years. The most frequent damaged buildings were mainly on the South Shore between Long Beach and West Hampton. The town of Vernon, Connecticut, settled a lawsuit between a woman and a police officer for $1.1 million. A police cruiser struck and killed Bianca Colon Hernandez in 2023. She was in a car driven by her fiancé. The fiancé is facing charges for driving under the influence and second-degree manslaughter with a motor vehicle. A Bellport man was indicted in what officials say is the largest fentanyl seizure in Suffolk County history. District Attorney Raymond Tierney says police found enough fentanyl at the man's house to kill everyone on Long Island. The man faces 15 years to life if convicted on the trafficking charge. Today is National Coming Out Day. It's a day meant to celebrate LGBTQ plus history and visibility. Shavonna Clark is the reigning Miss Connecticut USA, and she's the first openly LGBTQ plus Miss Connecticut in the state's history. WSHU's Haley Alvarado spoke with Clark about her own coming out journey.
Can I ask why you decided to become Miss Connecticut?
I have been doing pageants since I was a little girl, maybe two-ish. It's when I got into my first pageant, and I kind of just loved what pageantry was about. I mean, yes, it's really fun and glamorous, and we walk on stage and all that stuff, but it's also about having a message and sharing that and initiative and your platform, and I think that's really special. When I was competing, you know, one thing that I was solidified on is I really wanted to talk about mental health because that has been a huge... It's had a huge impact on my life. You know, along the way, I kind of realized how important it was to have someone in my position that is open about my sexuality and kind of a representation for other queer kids out there that may not think that they can achieve incredible things because of their sexuality. And I wanted to be able to have that platform.
And starting off so young as two, was there initial inspiration, like watching on TV?
I think my mom realized that I kind of loved just walking around the apartment, putting on a show, pretending like the hallway was my catwalk. As I got to understand pageantry more, you know, I grew up watching the Miss USA pageant every single year, Miss USA and Miss Universe, so... kind of seeing that and seeing those women and the things that they're able to accomplish. And, you know, I took a break from pageantry for a while, and it wasn't until 2019 that I saw Zosie, who was Miss South Africa, win Miss Universe. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's just this beautiful black woman, short hair. And I looked at her and I was like, she looks like me. And then I remember looking at my mom and saying, I think I can do that. I think I could be that inspiration for someone.
And do you think representation is important for the children, especially for coming out days?
I realized that I actually liked girls when I was in middle school. I was in middle school and I was like, something's wrong because I have crushes on girls, not boys. Like, what is going on with me? But I grew up in a very heteronormative environment. You know, I was born and raised in the Bronx, and my neighborhood was very Caribbean and specifically Jamaican. And the Jamaican culture is not known for always being the most accepting. So I grew up in a very, very straight environment, and I didn't have that to look up to. So when I was trying to understand who I was in middle school and why I had these feelings, I actually didn't have a good grasp of what was happening. And I had no one to look up to. I actually talk about a lot how me figuring out my sexuality and my mental health journey kind of started at the same time, because being so confused and not having that representation in terms of my sexuality really affected my mental health, anxiety, depression, and kind of how I saw and moved throughout the world.
For your Miss Connecticut interview, you wore a crochet dress.
I did.
And it had the colors of, was it the lesbian flag?
Yes, so I crocheted my own outfit for my Miss USA interview. It was magenta that was my grandma's favorite color. You know, when she was alive, she would tell everyone that she knew that her granddaughter was going to compete at Miss USA one day. So she truly manifested that for me. So I really wanted to celebrate her. On the back of the top, I did a lot of beading work in the colors of the lesbian flag, which was also really to talk about that. That was the first question they actually asked me about in my Miss USA interview. They were like able to tell them like the backstory behind that, and that was really special for me.
And how did you come to love your identity as being part of you?
Oh my gosh, it's been a journey. I think mental health for sure has been one part of the journey. I've had incredible therapists, just people on my side who have really spoke to me and kind of given me that grace and that space to accept and love who I am. But I think a huge, huge part of it is definitely my mom. I still remember coming out to her. And the really funny thing about coming out to my mom is she already knew, right? So growing up, there were several times that I remember that she'd be like, Shavana, do you like girls? And I'd be like, no, mom. And I remember when I was finally ready to come out and I told her, and we were just both crying, and she was just like, I was just waiting for you to feel comfortable, to feel safe. I remember one June we were watching the Pride Parade on TV, and she turned to me and she's like, why aren't you out there? And I was like, I just started crying actually, because it was really emotional for me, honestly. And she was like, look at those people. Look at how happy and joyful they are to celebrate who they are. You will never be at peace unless you are able to fully embrace who you are. Coming out is just one part of the journey, but fully embracing it is a whole nother adventure. And because I had my mom and my family that have been so supportive, they allowed me to do that in my own time, but in a beautiful way. So very grateful for them.
That was Shavana Clark speaking with WSHU's Haley Alvarado. For the latest news from the Long Island Sound region, listen on the radio, stream on WSHU.org, or download the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford HealthCare. I'm Molly Ingram, in for Sabrina Garone. Have a great weekend.